mum's the word. But we're telling everyone. It's BOGO 50% off time at Designer Shoe Warehouse. Just in time for Mother's Day, buy any pair of shoes, get a second qualifying pair 50% off. Treat mom or yourself to the perfect spring styles from must-own brands. And hurry. Unlike a mother's love, this deal won't last forever. So make mom proud and score BOGO 50% off at your DSW store or DSW.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I will always be appreciative for D&M Auto Leasing that I get to have that 5 minutes a day.
Yeah.
And that's why sometimes I just want to stretch it out to 10 minutes if they let me.
Hey, what a great thing that D&M Auto Leasing does. Allowing us to just play around nonsensical for 5 minutes with Payne and Pendergast.
Before we play around nonsensical for 4 hours here in the loop here on Sports Radio 610.
Such is life.
That's right.
I said that, to Seth yesterday after we got done doing our segment on the 100 people that some online guy picked to fight the gorilla.
That's right.
I said to Seth, I'm like, we're cheating life so bad. Like, yes. We just got paid to talk about a gorilla going up against 100 men for 15 minutes.
That's right.
Yeah. The thing that apparently everybody is talking about, and we just so happen to, get the cash a check.
Yeah, Scott Ohl.
Yeah.
I don't want to make it seem like we're not doing work. We're definitely doing some work, Parker.
Yeah.
Don't come in.
Yeah.
Talk to me about, work.
That sweat right there on my brow, see.
We had to think a lot about that 100 men versus the gorilla. All right, let's get to actual work here on a Thursday in the loop before somebody come and pull me out this chair. I am Reginald Attitude with SB. Scott in for the OG John Lopez. Figgy Fig still here with the hair up, tied all nice. Let's get it going on a Thursday. As you can tell, the vibes are high.
Yeah.
And that's just because we generally like to have a good time. It's good people here at Sports Radio 610, but also, who am I kidding? The Rockets have staved off elimination, baby.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It is on to game six as the series rolls on. A victory for your Rockets. Can I call it an emphatic victory considering how it kind of finished up there?
Yeah,
Scott.
Just the fact that you were in position for it to finish the way it did, that you were standing around kind of scratching your head like, why is the 30-point lead now 15, 13, 14? Like, what's going on? But just the fact that you were in that position and in that position for so long, Reggie, they waved that white flag midway through the third quarter.
That's right.
Like, there are people on the other side of this wondering if Steve Kerr quit too soon, if he punted on a chance to close out this series either with his starters late after they, the bench guys came and got them back in the game, or simply just taking those guys out as early as he did. So, I mean, yeah, it's obvious an obvious emphatic victory when the opposing coach is making business decisions like that midway through the third quarter.
Well, I feel like I know someone who agrees with that particular sentiment that you put up there, and his name is Steph Curry. You saw him on the bench, and he looked like he was upset. Like, he looked like he was tapping his foot, trying to stop himself from going over to Steve Kerr and telling him about himself.
As he should, as a competitor. You would expect that, right? Like, this is one of those moments, Reggie, where I would expect the coach and the player to perhaps have different either motivations or different strategies on how to achieve the same goal. Whereas the player is competitive in a different way, the coach has to be more strategic and more cognizant of the long view, which I think is what Steve Kerr was at least trying to do, whether you agree with the decision or not, whereas Steph Curry is just ready to go out there and play.
Yeah, well, I think actually, starting out here, just talking about this Rockets game, I think for me, that's definitely one of the answers to this question, which is what was the thing that impressed you most about that huge Game 5 victory for the Rockets? It was a 131-116 win for the Rockets in which they shot fairly lights out. And, of course, these numbers got skewed by an entire fourth quarter that was at one point garbage time and then at another point garbage in a different way. But the idea that you could force a Golden State Warriors team to wave the flag before you even got to the final frame of this, considering how close all of these games, or I guess outside of that other one that they won, right, how close all of these games had been throughout the course of the series, like, and the ways in which there was conversations in a 3-1 series that had a tenor and a tone as if you were ready to, you know, get done with the season and, you know, memorialize it in some ways. And they went out there and they played like, you know, bats out of hell, like their hairs were on fire. And they shot the ball incredibly well. There were so many things in that game that felt like they were encouraging, especially in the idea that you put the Warriors in a place where they had to start considering their mortality. Yeah. And I say that very intentionally because you were talking about the Steve Kerr decision to bench guys. We're in a point in the series where you're getting games every other day as opposed to earlier on in the series where you had every 3 days you would have a game. And that is a huge check mark in the benefit of the Rockets to the point where I know Steve Kerr was like, hey, I got heavy legs. I got hurt thumbs over here. Like, I got to give them the rest of this quarter and see if that maybe helps us close it out in six.
Yeah. So the most impressive thing that I saw from the Rockets last night as a team would be the decisiveness on offense, the fact that – so the big criticism we have with them is it doesn't seem like they always have a plan. Or like they always stick to the plan, whatever it might be. So the ball doesn't move enough. They don't move enough. Therefore, their offense gets stagnant. Their spacing gets clunky. And they're over-reliant on either Alperen Şengün in some sort of ISO post situation or on, say, one of the guards just bailing them out, whether that's Fred VanVleet, Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, Amen Thompson in some cases, what have you. It's like Şengün or bailout. But what else are we going? What are we hanging our hats on beyond just our best player and like a hope and a prayer, so to speak? They were much better in this way. Like, I thought it was similar to game two where you saw Jalen Green, who is not going to get a lot of credit for this game because he gets hurt early in the game. And statistically, he gives you the least sort of output and production of anybody in the starting lineup. And so you think about Amen Thompson and Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks and what those guys gave you. But I thought early on to set the tone, Jalen Green amongst the rest of the starters did a really good job of staying connected, making the right basketball play, moving the ball around. And so I thought that set the tone for them offensively and just the simple fact that they were able to knock down their shots. I would say the other thing that was most impressive, and this would be more of on an individual standpoint, mm-hmm. Amen Thompson. Defense.
Oof.
Like, we've talked about it all year, and it became like a really – fun talking point for basketball talking heads about Amen Thompson emerging as an all NBA defensive type of guy, perhaps a defensive player of the year type of candidate. But, and I think that really started happening at the end of the year after he had that performance against Steph Curry,
mm-hmm.
which was probably a little bit overhyped for what it was. It was more of a team performance than I think it was given credit for.
Yeah.
But let's not lose sight of how special this young man is and has been defensively, stripping Steph Curry no less than I've counted 4, 5, maybe 6 times over the last couple of games. He had 5 steals in the first half last night. His defense on Steph Curry, like, it was no accident to me that Steph and Jimmy Butler were something like 3-17 or something like that off memory in the first half. Like, it was bad in the first half, and they were just overall not productive. And it had a lot to do – that number may be off, but it was something to that effect. And it had a lot to do with, I think, the tone set by Amen Thompson – on Steph Curry, and then don't want to lose sight of this, Dylan Brooks on Jimmy Butler. Those two specific matchups one-on-one, and then them overall as a team defensively has been nothing short of spectacular, especially last night. But I thought even in stretches in Golden State, it was the same way. So those are the things that have impressed me most about the Rockets so far.
Yeah, I think the Amen Thompson one is massive because defensively, like, he is going to take the, you know, the strongest assignment, obviously, primarily. We know in the modern NBA, it's going to be a team dynamic. There's going to have to be an entire system of what you're trying to do versus that other team that allows you to be successful. But you need the guys who are going to at least start that and force teams to go to the pick and roll and try and look for different matchups and stuff. And Amen absolutely has gotten to that place. Like, we talked a lot, and I know me personally, spent a lot. I took a lot of time talking about the youth that the Rockets come into in the playoffs and how playoff basketball is different than regular season basketball. And it's funny because over the last couple of years, it felt like that was starting to get to a place where playoff basketball wasn't as far away from regular season basketball.
Yeah.
And then this year they decided, no, we are going to restore the feeling. We're going to allow all this physicality. And you see the distinction and the difference between playoff basketball and regular season basketball this year. And it seemed like it took a minute. And Amen has even copped to that. You were there last night at Toyota Center. Like, Amen copped to that. That, hey, he felt like he was starting to get back to how he feels in game 4, And then game five, it was a continuation. I think that that's a very encouraging thing that gets me to the place where I go, oh, Amen Thompson, as we have come to like appreciate him, as we've come to understand him in this point of his career, he's arrived for these playoffs, and that's really encouraging. Not just defensively, but offensively. That was the big thing for me. Like him being somewhat effective on offense, getting downhill, attacking the basket. And I know he scored 25 points. I need to go back and check how many of that was in, you know, the time periods where the game was where the game was still contested. I know he had 14 in the first half. Yeah. And I know he added some in the I guess more garbage time, fourth quarter type portions of this. But man, like
it's more of the style though, right? It's
yes.
Like it's him, it's the confidence, it's him getting downhill, it's him forcing the issue and realizing that he is, you know, athletically superior to the next guy, more than likely whoever's going to be guarding him. It's him shooting the ball. He hit a three early in one of those. It was a three early in the game.
Hey, pull up three.
Kind of a little hezzy pull up three, like with a little style on it.
Yes.
Like, hey man, that's for offensive players, not for you, young man. Like don't let that. And I even made this point at the time. Don't let him start hitting shots like that with any kind of regularity, or let that irrational confidence in any way start to be validated by like actual results, because he's taking it more and he's doing it more. So I think for me, Reggie, like it was a thing that I was not ready to account for until the game happened. Like going into the game, I was not yet ready to account for the growth of Amen Thompson, or the adjustment that Amen Thompson had made from game one up until that point, and just having to figure out playoff basketball a little bit. Like we talked about it a little bit more, I think, with Shingun and Jalen Green. And I think Jalen Green's up and down nature was just a lot easier to fixate on. Of course, you had the Fred VanVleet moments too. So you're talking about, hey, your starting backcourt is giving you this. One of them gave you a 38-point game, and then the rest of the way is giving you single digits. The other one feels like, hey, that's your leader, and he's shooting you out of the game. He's shooting the ball that poorly, to where we were kind of like ignoring Amen Thompson because we don't expect a lot from him offensively.
Right.
And, you know, we'll take whatever we'll take his defensive performance because we know how good he is and he's been fine. But it's like, hey, when you think back on it, slowly it's getting better and better, and it seems like he's getting more confident, or maybe just more comfortable is the better word.
Yes.
With his role and what he's supposed to be doing out there. And again, that's something that I wasn't ready to account for until this game actually happened and I saw it throughout the entirety of a game, or through a stretch of like carryover from the previous game. And now it's got me thinking, okay, is this the mismatch or the matchup that I'm not thinking about enough in terms of what works for the Rockets and what works against the Warriors? Because like defensively, we get it. Steph Curry can be loose with the ball. Amen Thompson can pick your pocket.
Right.
But what if Amen Thompson is getting downhill, shooting middies with confidence and with conviction, and is forcing the issue athletically against a Warriors team that is not all that athletic?
Yeah, and I think that's going to be an intriguing proposition going into game six on Friday in San Francisco. Like, because how much of that is home, like the home cooking of this all, right? The opportunity to be in the familiar confines and have that feeling compared to being on the road at the Chase Center. We'll see how much that is. You mentioned one of the things for me that was incredibly impressive, and one of the things that I saw, I could see the difference in this, was the impact that Fred VanVleet's shooting and how scary that clearly is for a Golden State Warriors defense, how it was paying dividends, right? Because obviously he knocked down 8 3-pointers last game. You saw immediately early on, they go to the pick and roll the Rockets do, and the Warriors had to respect, and what that did was that got the Rockets back to moving the basketball.
Yeah.
You hit Alperen Şengün on the short roll, and now that ball can find its way around, right? Like the ball starts moving, the ball isn't static, the Warriors have to react and play active defense, and that drains them some more. Plus, that involves more back cutting, more movement for an offensive team that does not have like focal points. They don't have guys that are just like, hey, you offensively, you're going to go beat your man and then beat the second man and go get a bucket, right? Now this becomes more of an offensive proposition where the ball moves around, the ball movement generates opportunity, and you get, you know, guys knocking down open shots. You get Amen Thompson on backdoor cuts and 45-degree cuts. And you get something that felt also very intentional that I enjoyed quite a bit, the secondary portion of this, the clear intentionality with Jabari Smith Jr. to get him the ball on those kickouts. Because me and you have talked about this.
Can we get some more of it?
I think so.
Can we get some more of it?
Like, I hope so. At the very least,
I saw it a time or two, but it's not like I'm seeing it still enough. Like, and when you see it, it works. When you see it, it makes so much sense. So I'm right there with you. Like, the ball movement, right? It does.
Yes.
It does so much. It's, first of all, it's just flat out better offense. Okay, so check there. But then also the idea of making the Warriors work on defense, since they do so, they do all of these things that we're talking about on offense, setting these screens, running around, moving the ball, moving themselves. Okay, you make them do that sort of work on the defensive end. I think it helps you on the other end of the floor on top of the fact that it's better offense.
Yeah, I agree. And I just loved, I saw them run a specific play for Jabari Smith Jr.
Yes.
To get him the basketball. We saw Jabari Smith Jr., like, it seemed like there was a clear edict that, hey, yes, you're going to look to attack, but when you're trying to kick out, right, when that ball is moving, hey, you know Jabari's over there, right? Get him the basketball. He had 3 shots in the first 11 minutes, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's more than what he was getting in the way that the flow of the game, and I hope that they keep that going because he's been fantastic in the small workload that he's gotten. And in this series, it feels like the margins matter a good amount. That could be a place where you can get a marginal victory.
It is one of my frustrations and one of my criticisms, one of the few that I've had throughout the season. It's like they will tell you, hey, we don't really run plays for Jabari. He's a good enough player to kind of feel the game. Hey, you don't run plays for Jabari? Why not? Draw some up. Start doing that. Like, don't, like, I get that that's what you're telling me, but, like, stop doing that. Stop not doing that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, he's a good offensive player, a good catch-and-shoot player. We saw even on the play that you're talking about, he puts the ball on the ground for a couple of dribbles to ease into that shot. So, like, let's involve him more in the offense, and I think that the offense is going to look a lot better.
Yeah, maybe, I guess, a bow on all of this, because a lot of these things tie back to, I think that there was a level of confirmation of what Ime brings to this series. Because I think that there's, and don't get me wrong, there were questions in that game, right? Yeah. The ways in which you go to the bench, or maybe you refused to go to the bench, and then when you did go to the bench, the way that the bench came out,
like, I never mind.
Your decision to challenge a particular foul at the time that you do early on in the game for Ime Udoka. But I still think there were so many things that you look at as a hoop fan from Ime Udoka and go, okay, cool. Those are the things that I know that my coach is bringing to this series, and that was encouraging. As the Rockets win Game 5, push the series to 3-2, still in favor of the Warriors, and stave off elimination to go to Game 6 on Friday at a reasonable time, mind you.
Thank God for that.
Yes, God bless. Yes. And we'll talk more about that as we go along. It is a Thursday here in the Loop right here on Sports Radio 610. B. Scott in for the OG John Lopez. Coming up next, let's get to the Texans. We are a week away from just about a week away from rookie minicamp getting going for these Texans. Who are you most excited to see in rookie minicamp? 713-572-4610. That's the number to text. We'll do that next. Happy Victory Thursday to you. You are indeed in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Reginald Atitula, B. Scott in for the OG John Lopez today. Figgy Fig in for Figgy Fig, as always, doing the damn thing. And you, rocking with us and rolling with us. Appreciate you listening, however you're listening, on this Thursday, especially a big birthday shout out to Cornelius on the YouTube page. Appreciate you hanging out with us, and I hope you enjoy your day. You can always get involved with the program a number of ways. There is the text line, 713-572-4610. But also, always appreciation to the Mokarum Injury Lawyers for giving us the live stream. My bad. I didn't mean to step on that. But the live stream's both on the YouTube page, Sports Radio 610, and on the Twitch page, 610 Houston. B. Scott, and I have to apologize because I didn't trust your guidance here. You were like, we're a week away from minicamp. And I was like, we're about a week. No. It's next Thursday. The 8th to the 10th is when rookie minicamp gets going. Yes, the calendar is already moved like that. We are getting to them activities for real. And, I mean, with that being the case and with you having a 9-person rookie class, like, what are you most excited for? Who are you most excited for a week out? Or are you excited at all? Because, I mean, it is rookie minicamp.
No, so what's funny about it is that, and you probably remember this, because I tempered my excitement going into the draft.
Yeah.
I wasn't like too, and I'm typically like this just personally going into drafts, not too excited about the pre-draft process. I usually wait until after the draft to get excited about, or not excited, critical, I would say, about whatever it is that they do. And once we finished up with the draft, and honestly, after the first, or the first day for them, the second day of the draft, which was the first day for the Texans, I felt pretty good about what they had going on, and I'm pretty high on this draft class. I am probably different from others who are like super disappointed about not getting that offensive lineman. I'm disappointed overall with how the offensive line has been addressed as a whole, starting with free agency, the trade market, all the way up until the draft. But once they made these picks, and considering the like disappointment in the overall offensive line, I'm most excited about watching the one offensive lineman that they did draft. And it's not like we're going to watch him do a whole bunch of offensive lineman things at rookie minicamp, or for that matter, watch them do much of anything at rookie minicamp. But here's why I'm excited.
Okay, please.
We're trying to figure out how they're going to address exactly this issue on the interior offensive line.
Correct.
Whether this guy, Arianti Urseri, the second round pick out of Minnesota, who's a tackle, who's only played tackle.
Not just only played left tackle, only played left tackle at the college.
Only played tackle and only played left tackle at the college level. But again, as we talked about, is big as a mofo. Is a massive, massive, massive human being.
6'6", 330, right?
And moves well. And so is athletic for that, moves well for that size, and is 6'6", 330 plus. So you're telling me that, hey, we've got a tackle, perhaps a surplus at tackle. Don't necessarily need him to play tackle, but he's humongous, and can he play guard? Well, this is where they start to ask that question. Like, I'm sure they've asked the question before. Like, they've probably batted it around before they drafted the guy. But when you get them the rookie minicamp, and this is important, I think, because we've heard Nick Caserio talk about this specifically. How do you know about this whole positional flexibility thing, whether a guy can do more than what you necessarily, the position that you necessarily drafted him at, or the position that you necessarily signed or traded for him at? Well, you bring them into the building, and for rookies in particular, that starts with rookie minicamp. That's where they decide and figure out how much can this guy handle right now physically. Since what he's been going through so far has been preparation for the draft, it's been more football workout type of stuff and not necessarily football, like actual football training. It's a little bit, I would say a lot different from exactly what they're going to have them doing with the team. So what can they handle physically? And then what can they handle mentally? Can they even make the mental adjustment of going from tackle to guard, much less the physical one? This is when those questions start to get asked. And I feel like the offensive line is going to be one of the, if not the most concentrated position group and talked about position group of training camp and going into the season and probably throughout the season until they answer those questions. And as far as rookie minicamp goes, I want to know if the guy that they drafted to play tackle that they don't necessarily need to play tackle yet could be their answer at guard, where I feel they have been deficient at figuring that part out so far.
Dude, we are in lockstep. I feel exactly the same. And I think you're right. I don't know that we're going to have definitive answers. Well,
But this is where the questions will start to get asked.
Fair. No, I think the thing that I would actually say is, if we do have a definitive answer, I think you're significantly more likely, if not just entirely, in the place where if you have an answer by the end of rookie minicamp, it is no, right? It is not yes, right? If you have it, it's just like, oh, no, we can't do this. And so, yeah, because especially like he is a big boy, as we've talked about already, 6'6", 330, like that size is evident to the point where John Harris on Texans All Access yesterday, I believe, was like, walking around the building, you're like, oh, you notice he's a different size. And it's not like they had small boys in that building.
Right.
Right. He is a big boy amongst big boys. But then on top of that, like one of the things that makes him like that made Arianti more graded in that, like, you know, a little bit further down from that top class of the tackles in this was just he gets a little upright, sometimes trusts on his athleticism too much.
Yeah.
And that is cool, maybe on the edge for tackle, especially with the size that you have. You are strong, and I typically associate that with being in the guard, like being in that guard spot. You don't have to necessarily move as much, or you can lean on your strength, but you also need to lean on your leverage. And if your technique especially gets you upright, let one of these pro defensive tackles get into you and get under you, and it's a problem. So like early on, what does the technique look like early? But then can you see that athletic bend from him in order to kind of apply his leverage in a proper way early on? I'll be interested to see what we get from that. I'm with you on Arianti. Are there any other rookies that catch your attention? Because that one, like, I think you're right. They have not addressed offensive interior offensive line, all that strong, at least not to my liking, right? You got some guys that have played, that have started. However, when they've played recently, they ain't been that all that good. And then you got Titus Howard who might slide in. Like, that's what we're talking about interior.
Well, I do want to say, like, the things that you point out, like, if you're able to identify those things and all of the draft analysts are able to identify those things, then the switch that you made at offensive line coach and changing this offense, bringing in a new offensive coordinator, like, that's where coaching comes into play, and sure. That's where I want to see that show up. And it's not like I'm going to be able to necessarily see that show up at rookie minicamp, but this is where I see them sowing the seeds, so to speak. Like, right now, you can identify that Cam Robinson's probably their left tackle. They paid him to be that.
Not really a better option.
More than likely, their right tackle is going to be either Blake Fisher or Titus Howard, a combination of one of those two guys. You feel confident that one of those two guys is probably going to be the guy, no matter how confident you actually are in that guy, it's probably going to be that guy.
Fair enough.
Who are the guards? Like we think it's Ed Ingram and Lakin Tomlinson. If I had to bet, that's
who it is. I can't give you solid books. Like, I might be nil bidden here, brother. Like, I got a whole bunch of possibles here.
It's tough. It is a rough look. So that's why I'm so fixated on that. Now, the other guys that I'm excited about, I don't need rookie minicamp to get excited about them. I just think that they are, like, I don't know if Ursary is going to contribute in year one. I think he is a plan and a bet on the future.
Agreed. Strong agree.
These other guys that I'm excited about, Jaden Higgins, Jalen Knoll.
Yeah, that just feels like, can I get video? Like, are we going to get video from rookie minicamp? Just, can I get video of him doing some fun right quick? That's what I'm looking for from those cats.
Yeah, I mean, Woody, these guys, I think, are going to contribute right away. Like, just not necessarily, hey, you're looking at stars, but C.J. Stroud needed more weapons. I think C.J. Stroud got three more weapons that are going to contribute right away. I don't need rookie minicamp to convince me. Like, it would have to – something bad would have to happen for me to think otherwise. Like, these guys aren't in shape or they're not the workers that they expected that they were. Something off like that. And I don't anticipate anything like that. So I'm excited about those guys. I don't need rookie minicamp for that. I'm more intrigued by – and this is where a lot of the journalism and the question asking will come into play, because, like, you'll want to know, hey, how are they – how are they working with Ursary right now?
Yes.
Like we understand he's a left tackle. They drafted him to be a left tackle at some point. But as a rookie, could he be somebody that they are coaching up to address the very things that you just talked about, the issues in his game that make him maybe not an ideal candidate to play guard, but the fact that he is such a talented prospect and, again, a mammoth of a man?
Yeah. And if I can throw a little bit more out here at you when it comes to rookie minicamp, assuming that we get anything of this sort, I've just continued looking at the name Keontae Hamilton, the defensive tackle that we took in the seventh round, and he seems like an upside play. Like, he is just, hey, there's some nice raw materials here, but it is relatively raw. Can you put him in a defensive room with, you know, Matt Burke in there and obviously D'Amico Ryans in there with what they've been able to do bringing players along and find you a nice little defensive tackle in there? I kind of want to see what the baseline is, like what the starting point is for him. Like, how far along is he in this raw talent? Like, is he just real, real raw? Or is this like, actually, it's a little bit closer than you might expect. And with the right spit shine, you can get him into doing things, because that interior of the defensive line was something that you wanted to address. And that's, I mean, you did it in the seventh round, if you even want to call that addressing, right? I do wonder, is he capable of getting into this rotation, or is this going to be one of those things that's cool? And we'll circle back around to this at a later date, whether it's next year or what have you.
Yeah, and I can't pretend to know right now what he's capable of, but I will say that I like the idea of, give me a defensive player, and the closer you make him to the line of scrimmage, give me a defensive player who's a project, the closer he is to the line of scrimmage, the more I like that experiment with D'Amico Ryans. Because they do wonders with linebackers, and obviously the defensive line is the heart of what they do defensively. For as much confidence as we lack with them with offensive linemen, I would say it's the opposite on the defensive line. We trust them to sort of develop prospects. And if this is somebody that doesn't work out, obviously it's a late round pick and it's okay.
Right, exactly. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Someone said, have hope that Ursary is the left tackle of the future after Cam leaves. And it does feel like they've situated themselves for that, because if it's not Ursary that you're looking at to be the left tackle of the future, who is, right? I mean, Cam Robinson's got a 1-year deal right here.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, yeah, and second round pick. I mean, like, that is the feel and the hope. Now, if it doesn't work out, that's his own thing. But that definitely feels like the intention.
Yeah. All right. Coming up next, let's get to our question of the day. We were watching that Rockets game last night. It was fun. They got a victory. There was a few moments where somebody was just like real shameless. So we'll talk about those. But the question of the day, what is something that you are just shameless about? What are you most shameless about that maybe you probably shouldn't be shameless about? 713-572-4610. That's the number to text. Text in and we'll talk about it next. Sorry, Mr. Big Voice Man. John Lopez out there fishing somewhere. But we got maybe the next best thing, maybe a better thing. I don't know. I'll let you guys determine that. His name is Brandon K. Scott B. Scott in the building. What's happening, bro?
Man, I appreciate it. Hey, look, but look, must be nice out there. You can just be out there fishing.
Bro, he just got a new boat.
Got a new boat?
New boat we fish with, too.
I'm out here grinding.
You know what I'm saying?
Trying to get a new car, trying to save up for a house, as we say. And my man has got a new boat.
New boat money.
Man. Hey, it must be nice. Hey, you where we trying to get to, Lopez?
That's right.
Yeah.
And also, you could also tie this in. We're getting to the question of the day, 713-572-4610. And it's kind of a shame Lopez ain't here because he has a lot of shameless to him. He got a lot of, I just do this. You're just going to have to deal with it. Where are you the most shameless in your life? 713-572-4610. Because we saw, and we have seen kind of during this series, Rockets, Warriors, a good amount of a deficit of shame, so to say, with various people. Obviously, the first thing that comes to mind is Draymond bleeping Green.
Yeah.
But funny enough, he was not a culprit, at least for me, in this game, game five yesterday. There were two folks that I thought were fairly shameless. One of them was Dylan Brooks. And it was, I mean, it really started from the Warriors broadcast. You know, in the first round, the home broadcast get to continue going. And the worst ranked broadcast in the NBA, shout out to Awful Announcing, the Golden State Warriors broadcast there, I believe it's on NBC Sports.
Yeah, they got their own Bay. NBC Sports Bay Area network. They were ranked, I don't think I saw that part. I know we talked about the Rockets being, their broadcast crew being ranked there in the middle, but the Warriors were the last ranked
crew?
That's
right. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. I just wanted to remind y'all of that. And I'm not saying nothing. I'm just saying. But they were out there like, oh, man, Dylan Brooks is clearly swiping at Steph Curry's, you know, wrapped up thumb, the thumb that was injured late in the season that, you know, he was dealing with, getting, you know, into the play-in games. And obviously he's been dealing with through this series. It's like, oh, man, he's trying to intentionally hit that and stuff. And, I mean, is it Brad O? Is that my boy's name
on
Twitter?
Yeah, Brad O. Twitter, yep.
He did a good job of highlighting how that's kind of how Dylan Brooks contests. He's, you know, contests with that high-five kind of mentality trying to – because that's not going to be called as a foul.
Right.
You can get a little contact, maybe throw him off the rhythm, but not get it called as a foul.
Hand is part of the ball.
Right. Dylan Brooks was asked about this after the game, and you were here for that. You were at Toyota Center when this was asked. Dylan Brooks – media saying that you were targeting Curry's thumb. Is that right?
No, I've been playing the game. Shoot. If you're going to come play the game injured or whatever you got, it's all about the game. You know, if I had an injured ankle, I would attack that ankle every single time. So, whatever they're saying on the broadcast, they can keep saying it.
You could just be like, nah.
You play to win the game.
Thank you, Herm.
Hello. I mean, do you not though? Like he was spitting when he said that. Like you actually literally played to win the game. So what are we out here for? What are we out here doing?
Hey, let me not touch his thumb.
Right.
Because I don't want to hurt him.
And we're not talking about scrapping for the ball, getting on the floor, and then taking a cheap shot at the thumb.
Is that Brian Bosworth? Will he be in there in that huddle?
Oh, and he's just one. I mean, that's kind of a common theme for football players. Like the stories that you'll hear at the bottom of a scrum.
Especially like in the 80s and stuff or 70s in football. It was menacing.
And then bringing it to basketball. Like a lot, you could find a lot worse stories than this in the old school game that people claim to love and miss so much. Like Larry Bird, who's still alive, by the way, is rolling over in his metaphorical grave. Like the Bad Boys Pistons are rolling
Bill
over.
Bill Laimbeer is sick right now.
Is sick in his metaphorical grave. Rick Mahorn, who is on the sidelines for these Detroit Pistons games right now, is rolling over in his metaphorical grave at the idea that you can't even contest a shot and tap a thumb that just so happens to be a little hurt or a little injured. What's he supposed to do? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Curry, that your thumb is injured. Let me stay away from that. Well, as I try to play to win the game, the hell out of here with that.
So that was one shameless. And the shamelessness was not the contesting in the way that he does, even if he was trying to hit people's thumb, which he did not do anything to dissuade.
Yeah.
Also, Park Ranger Pat, as I've come to call him, Pat Shepard, actually got in this game in garbage
Spencer.
Time. Is it Spencer?
Yeah.
One of them. Y'all know who I'm talking about.
You mixed Pat Spencer and Reed Shepard together.
Different white guy.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Wow. I'm going to have to write. You know, the notes apology is coming. I'll let you know that right now. I did not mean nothing by that. Yeah, I have many white friends myself.
We apologize to the white community.
100%. I love you folks and all of your culture and your contributions. But, Pat.
Spencer.
Well,
61.
That's right. That's
start calling him by his odd number.
Hell, that's right.
I was going to call him Pat McAfee. He looked a little like Pat McAfee
Sure, Pat was out here headbutting. Yeah. Alperen Sengun. So a lot of shamelessness. Where does your shamelessness show up? 713-572-4610, where the 832 said, or sorry, the 713 said, in high school, their boy got hurt during his JV game. The opposing team's varsity was in the stands laughing. So the next night, varsity night, unabashedly broke a DB's arm. Ooh. All right, you a little different.
Yeah.
You a little different.
That is one that you definitely should have. And I know we asked the question, something that you're shameless about that you should have
shame. We listen
shame.
And we don't judge.
That is one that you definitely should have shame for. Minor, I have a couple of basic ones. It's sneaking food or snacks into places where you're not, like the movies, or honestly just anywhere where you're not supposed to bring it.
Where else? Because I always think about the movies, sneaking in some candies, dollar store candy or something.
At the risk of putting myself out there, even in some of these games, like...
With
the press pass, we're allowed to bring in a bag, right?
Okay.
In places where you're not allowed to bring in a bag. So, and some of these places do charge for the food. So if you want to put some food in your bag, they're not going to stop you.
Hypothetically, of course.
Hypothetically speaking.
If, B. Scott would never do such a
thing. Well, no, if I were to do it,
all right, I would OJ. Do He went full OJ.
If I were to do it, okay. I would do it with
if
no shame.
If I did it.
If I did it, I would do it with no shame.
Oh, that's great.
That's all I'm saying. So that, taking the lotion and shampoo away from
the hotel,
yes. Even though that stuff is not made for black people and I wouldn't really use it as a matter of preference, but only as a matter of desperation, but taking it just in case and taking it just because you can, no shame in that. So yeah, those would be two of my top ones. My biggest one though is watching bullies get beat up. I think Figgy put it the best way, kind of in the break when we were talking about this. I don't care who you are, how you're shaped, what your makeup is. If you're a bully, I have no shame in watching you get yours. Man, woman, boy, girl, old, young, I do not care.
Oh, you didn't do the tried and true black, white, yellow, green, purple?
But there you go. I have not met no green and purple people, or yellow for that matter. But don't have no shame in watching you get yours if you got it coming.
From the 832, getting a refill strawberry lemonade to go at restaurants.
Yeah.
Oh, I always
oh,
loved
that's
that.
A
was,
good one.
That was actually going to be mine. I don't know if y'all been to
are
my...
Are you a water cup guy or are you just
no,
extra
no,
refill guy
I'm actually
go?
Not doing that. No, I'm not the water cup guy. But whenever I go to my pizza, they have a blackberry lemonade or something like that.
Yeah.
I drink as much as I can while I'm there. And then I take one to go. I put no ice in it. Because I save it for later.
That's how they get you. The ice is how they get you.
One of those no ice guys. Yeah,
like,
I'm already cold.
Let me fill this up to the brim.
Also a no ice guy. I'm with you.
Yeah. No, so I'm that for sure. That's a good one. Because I'll go, Jack in the Box has a specific piece. It's a peace tea or a sweet peace tea or something like that. That's like a zero sugar tea. And it's hard to find. I'll go in there with the cup that, and they know me in there now. I'll go in there with the cup that I bought the day before. Now, I won't go 2 days because that's kind of nasty. Yeah. But the cup from the day before, I think, is still good enough. I'll go in there with the cup the day before, get the free refill as if I just bought it that day. And they're not even tripping.
You want to know my shameless?
No shame in that.
You want to know my shameless? I did this on Tuesday.
Okay.
If I'm at a spot having an adult beverage, give me the fruitiest, tastiest one on the menu.
Oh, see, that's one I hate. Like
I am shameless about it.
I hate that you even would have to have shame. Like Lopez is one of these that tries to like man shame you into liking fruity drinks.
Yeah, he tried to man shame. I think it was us or Ron about
Ron.
Having daiquiri in New Orleans.
To me, if you drink juice, Kool-Aid, or anything sweet, then what's the difference in just spiking it and putting some alcohol in it? Like, I don't see what's so not manly. Like, is it not manly to drink Kool-Aid?
I took this to another.
Can I have apple juice? I'm just saying.
Some people won't let you have apple
juice. Can I have orange juice? You know what I'm saying?
At breakfast, apparently.
So you saying I can't have a mimosa, but I can drink orange juice? Get out of here, man.
Yeah, it's the champagne that changes it. But no, I ordered something called a Pink Panther on Tuesday. And what's funny is they gave it to me in that big old martini glass, like the big one. And then old girl, she was about to hand it to me. She was like, actually, you only put this in a regular glass? And I was like, no. Why would I do that?
I like this pretty glass.
Yeah.
Ain't got no shame.
I want people to know I'm drinking this.
Get out of here.
Enjoying it. Somebody said, now taking a cup when you haven't bought anything that day and getting a refill, that's something you should feel shame for. Yeah. They're coming for you, B. Scott.
Hey, that's the purpose of the segment.
They are coming for you.
No shame where it should be.
All right, and this one, I did say I listen and don't judge. I'm having trouble here. From the 832, they said they'll pick their nose whenever, wherever, no shame. Is their nose.
All right, man. All right, man. See yourself out. See yourself out.
I'm trying.
Keep listening to the show, but metaphorically speaking, see yourself out, bro.
Oh, no. Y'all going to have to fight with B. Scott. We don't have to break on this one from the 281. It is, in fact, not manly to drink Kool-Aid. I don't know if that's a two all America's right. moment. I don't know what's happening there. But
brother probably don't mix no liquor at all. Just straight rubbing alcohol.
I got this Adam's apple. I'm good. You know what I'm saying? You can hear the manly here. You know what I'm saying? Go and give me my martini, my margarita.
Wait, hold
my
on.
My daiquiri.
Excuse me. Pardon me. I'm doing personal business now. From the 832. Let me put you on that Blackberry Crown Royal and lemonade. It's something serious. Me and you going to have to talk.
No, that Blackberry Crown is good.
That
though.
Sounds
I was drinking that
delicious.
Straight.
Okay.
I was drinking that straight.
It is a Tuesday at 10:58 p.m. or a.m. rather, and I am talking about drinks. All right. Anyways. All right. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Good thing Lopez isn't there. He'd fill the entire show with shameless behaviors. Coming up next,
so true.
It is true. And I appreciate it about him. He's like, y'all not gonna bully me. All right, coming up next, let's go around the NFL, including is this something that the NFL is considering that could cripple the pregame shows that they have with their partners? I'll tell you more about it next.